Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Mike Shope.
I have these notes, but I gotta say I'm just fired up to be here today.
And the Bulldog.
Pretty cool! Pretty damn cool! Woo!
On WGR.
Come on! Get up! Come on, get up! If you're as psyched as I am!
Sports Radio 550.
Didn't know I was being recorded.
No one could
at the
possibly,
doctor's office.
No one could possibly be as psyched as that man was. Psyched.
Balmer?
Yeah.
Yeah, he seems to, everything I've ever seen of him,
I don't know.
It's like that. There's a lot of energy.
It's some pretty cool moments, but.
Good for him. Aren't you sort of jealous of people with lots of energy? Would you say that?
No, they're just not if they're wasting it like that.
Well, it's, I don't know how much they're wasting. People like that seem to just always be like that.
Oh, he might have needed a nap after that.
All right. Joining us now on the West Her Hotline is Travis Yost, TSM. We love having Travis on. It's been a while. We have the Bills season to wrap up with Travis. He's a Bills fan. We've got the Sabres season to talk about. And at least one food take that I will present to the court. Travis, how you been? Happy New Year.
I'm doing good. Bill season is never over. I'm literally sitting here right now with the Buffalo over everything shirt on. The season lives on. I expect them to play the Sunday night game this weekend.
What are you thinking about? Are you thinking about how many night games next year? Are you thinking about draft picks, free agency? What's out there for you? What's in your mind?
I'm thinking about the 30 for 30 ESPN's going to do over Josh Allen throwing a jump ball to a fullback and missing an open player in single coverage who I learned a week later from the All-22 was Lee Smith. I want to know everything about it. I want to know the play design. I want to know the personnel. I want to know the Josh Allen. Why throw it to DeMarco in double coverage? Like, I want to know everything about that.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know about Lee Smith until like 2 days later. And that's when I just was like, what is even happening here? Like, who runs a play with those two cats running deep? Like, what are you doing?
Well,
do you think Lee Smith could have got a holding penalty downfield?
He gets his penalties.
Or a personal foul or something. I mean, he should have done something down there.
That play.
Hands to the face, yeah.
I mean, Allen does this plenty, but dude, run. I mean, the play has unfolded. He's out on the left. He's got time. Like, he was such a good runner. I mean, I could. I know how often he fumbled, but I've always this year I wanted to see more Allen runs. And in the playoff game, you know, there was a good number, but there could have been more.
What always blows my mind, Travis, about a play like that is how is not some fast guy running across the field waving like Antonio Brown used to do for Ben Roethlisberger. Like, how is that not happening on that play? Allen had the ball for like 8 seconds.
I know every team and every market and every world and every year ever says, oh, this year is important at the draft. But it does feel like this year is important at the draft, right? Like, they have got to hit. And it seems odd to want a receiver as early as the first round when you're not holding a premium pick, like, you know, in the top eight or so. But how do they not go that route?
It seems like a good year for it, and I like that idea as much as any other at this point.
Not that we're doing like a 30 for 30 on your Bills fandom, Travis, but it strikes me, I don't know that we've ever asked you, at least I have not been here if it's come up. Like, how did that happen for you?
Oh, this is a truly terrible story up until, I guess, this year. So when I was a little one, I think it was like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years old. You know how they always ask, you know, when you're 3 and 4, you just field a, you know, litany of moronic questions. I remember asking my old man at the time. So this is like 92, 93. I remember asking him, like, you know, Dad, what's the New York team? And, you know, we're out on Long Island. And of course, my dad gives me the corny, well, actually, there's only one New York team. And for whatever reason, my impressionable 3-year-old, 4-year-old self was like, oh, Buffalo? Yeah, I'm a Bills fan. And granted, you know, my entire dad's side of the family is all from upstate New York. So, you know, there was bloodline there to some degree. But that little response, and so keep in mind, right? Like, so think about my trajectory there. I'm coming in as a fan. Let's say you start becoming a real fan around like 9 or 10 or whatever. That's like 99, 2000, right? So I have really hit the apex of when to not be a Buffalo fan in that realm, because I mean that's roughly from like 2000 to 2017, 18. That was some stretch.
Right.
Yeah, you did a terrible job.
You timed it exactly when they stopped winning. That's right. Well, there's still hope for you. You're a young guy. Travis Yost with us on the West Shore Hotline. So the Sabres in the NHL here. The Sabres have won 3 straight. Joe just pointed it out. All in regulation, by the way. Should fans be encouraged? What does it look like here to you right now?
I think they should be a little bit encouraged. And by the way, got another coach fired in the process, right? I mean, yep. How many coaches have been fired after losing to Buffalo? It's remarkable this year. But the Sabres are in an interesting spot. Like they have 51 points, 48 games. I think they're fifth in the division. 11th in the conference, but they're at a point where they're not out of it yet. And despite the play being broadly underwhelming for most of the year, one of the interesting things to me is even where they're currently at, which is really looking up at the majority of the teams in the Eastern Conference, they've got a really promising stretch here coming up. I think I looked at it. I think they've got 9 of the next 11 games are at home. They basically have 2 back-to-back 5-ish game homestands. And if you look at the teams coming in, it's a lot of similarly situated teams with deficiencies, whether they're scoring issues, goaltending issues. They do host Colorado, which could be a bloodbath. But like absent the Avalanche, there's a lot of quote-unquote winnable games there. And, you know, if there's any time to go on a run here where you get, you know, you're playing at like a 1.3 point per game pace, it's right now, because the opportunity here is significant for the Sabres. And I actually think this stretch is going to be the one that ultimately decides what this team does at the deadline too, right? They go on a decent stretch here over these next 11 games. They could absolutely be situated to the point where like, hey, yeah, we're in this. And maybe we're only 30 or 40% in this, but we're still in it. So we have to change our mindset for the February 25 trade deadline. Or it could go the other way, and usually it has gone the other way. But you know, they drop a majority of these winnable games. They're just going to know by let's say early February that they are selling pieces at the deadline.
Yeah, we ran it down earlier today, and yeah, Travis, Detroit is in there twice. They've got Ottawa to lead it off. Ottawa's the first road game after that stretch. There's one road game in the middle of it, and that's the Rangers. Columbus twice in there. Anaheim's in there. It's pretty nice. Like Toronto and Colorado are the only teams that are like not in the schmozzle the Sabres are in, that are in that mix.
And the other interesting thing is that's kind of indicative of the league right now this year, huh? For whatever reason, there's not a lot of teams right now that you look at and you're like, wow, they are an absolute Stanley Cup contender. And maybe I'm overstating it a touch, but remember everyone's like, oh, Boston's going to run away with that division. And they've hit quite the stretch. I mean, that Brad Marchand shootout miss, like everyone laughed at it, and it's like, oh, they cost themselves a point. They actually cost themselves 2 points, right? I mean, they blew a 3-goal lead in the process. They haven't been playing well lately. And you're like, oh, Tampa Bay's on fire. Yeah, but they didn't play for the first 2 months of the season. Toronto fired their coach. I mean, this is just the Eastern Conference. Then go out west. Nashville was one of the, you know, maybe not a cup contender, but, one of the more reputable playoff teams. They fired their head coach. Vegas was Vegas was the odds-on favorite in the Western Conference. And even despite a very decent record, I think they already have 56 points. They fired their coach. Like, you know, Colorado looks really good, but they've had injury issues. But there haven't been outside of Washington, there haven't been a ton of obvious teams where you look at them and you're like, absolute Stanley Cup contender, no doubt about it. So this is this bigger-than-expected muddy middle, which, in my opinion, makes it opportunistic for Buffalo.
Travis Yost with us. Speaking of Vegas and Gerard Gallant being fired here after their loss to the Sabres on Tuesday night, then he was fired the next day. I read your article about them. They happen to be my Stanley Cup bet that I just made this week. just trying to find the team that has some smart numbers and a good price. And they were 13-1 to win the Cup. I thought maybe that would go up after the coaching change, but it really hasn't. Maybe everybody's sort of keen to that. Well, last year, for example, and other times teams have made coaching changes and gone on to win. Doesn't seem like maybe that bad of an indicator. You know, I think if I can sum up what you wrote, I might do it like this. Teams don't really seem to understand yet that goaltending going south, you know, is why they see their team lose. And they make a coaching change thinking, I mean, I sort of feel like it has to be this way, Travis, that they think they're doing more, that they're addressing something else than just really slumping goaltending.
Yeah, the theme of the article, and by the way, first off, the bet at 13-1 price, that's about as good as you're going to get. I mean, go look at the Western Conference. First off, let's talk strategically here. It's a division-based playoff format. What team in the Pacific has better personnel right now than Vegas? It's not really close, right? That's number one. So at a minimum, assuming Vegas gets one of the three divisional spots, which I think is more likely than not to occur, who is scaring you? Is it Edmonton and Calgary and Arizona? And like I really like Arizona this year, but like are those teams the teams that you put over Vegas? No way. And the other thing is, you know, I don't. The thing about coaching firings is a lot of times we don't know what we don't know, and a lot of the times, and it's not nefarious. Sometimes stuff does happen behind the scenes, and it's like, oh, we have to move on. And that just maybe becomes the cherry on top. But it is fascinating to me. If you look at every single coaching firing over the last 3 years, there's been one common theme. The goaltending, the stop rates in the 10 games preceding the firing are anywhere from shaky at best to absolutely awful. And it's almost as if front offices react to goaltending performance, especially in short periods, by orders of magnitude aggressively more than anything else. And I always find that fascinating because goaltenders are also the hardest to forecast, the hardest to understand, and yet we're so susceptible to making coaching changes in those type environments. And the other implied point in that piece, and by the way, Gerard Gallant, what was his save percentage over the last 10 games from Fleury and Subban? 858. I mean, that is unwinnable regardless. And to your point, there's third in chances, second in expected goals. They're still running crazy good goal differentials when you control for goaltending. But yeah, they go through a bad goaltending stretch, kill them in the standings for a little bit. Still in a playoff spot, though, 3 points out of the division, and they make a coaching change, which, ironically, to a guy who oversaw some of the worst goaltending we have ever seen in the last 10 years between Martin Jones and Aaron Dell in San Jose.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was odd. At a minimum, Gallant's going to get a job like tomorrow quickly. If DeBoer can get a job that quickly after the way, you know, and I think, again, in Vegas's defense, I think goaltending was unfairly a way, way, way negative mark on DeBoer. Maybe the same way it was to a lesser degree on Gallant in the way the goaltending has happened here. But here's the reality. If Fleury and Subban regress, let's say towards league average, what do we expect? Like right now, year to date, they're 18th in save percentage all situations. Like that's not terrible. If they regress to 15th or 14th, plus you know you've got maybe the best 5-on-5 team in the Western Conference with a power play that's 7th in goals, like to me, 13-1 is a crazy good price.
Right. But maybe like they'll just sort of eventually that gets right and, I don't know, run away with the division. But like I don't know. I would like them to still win that division. I mean, they're only a point out of first place, for God's sake.
Yeah. Well,
yeah, it's not a good division. And by the way, I mean, I'm not going to get on this rant. We'll have plenty of time for that. How many good teams in the Eastern Conference are going to be left out looking at teams in the Western Conference, specifically the Pacific, that are 5 points worse in the standings but have a guaranteed playoff spot? It is as topsy-turvy as it is. We complain about it every year. It is as bad this year as it's ever been, and a lot of it is because of how good the Metro is and how bad the Pacific is.
Mm-hmm. Travis Yost with us. The Sabres play in Nashville tomorrow night. One point that came up yesterday, we were talking to Rob Ray in Dallas, and what I don't remember what started it. It was about waivers with the expansion draft in mind, that teams might be more moves, maybe more goalie moves.
You find your way
moves.
To a goalie. We're talking about whether we trust Ullmark going into next year, even Ullmark and Hutton, and can you find your way? Do you think they'll make a move? Because Luukkonen is still, you know, a ways off.
And Rob mentioned, like, Matt Murray. You might have heard something about that. I'm thinking about Vegas. I don't know about their cap space, but maybe there's a goalie move. Have you thought this through, Travis, whether it's goaltending or just the league in general, whether there might be more action than we have gotten used to? We've gotten used to there being not that much, I think. And would Seattle be a catalyst?
It certainly, I mean, I had like seven different interesting thoughts come to my mind in that 30-second little back and forth. Because number one, like, you hit one of the really interesting theories in hockey right now that's not spoke about a lot, but I think it's a really important point. The teams that have, by and large, and this used to be a very common strategy, you punt on the backup goalie. You accept the fact that your starting goalie is going to give you 65 to 68 games. You're going to have 10 games of randomness from Peter Budaj or pick your favorite journeyman backup in the league. And you know what? It is what it is. Those are schedule loss games, and we're good with it. If you look around the league, the vast majority of teams do not play goalies, their starting goalies, remotely at that same type of rate. They understand workload better. They understand burden better. They understand injury risk better. And what has happened is backup goalies now are starting to eat a little bit more into the cap because teams are recognizing, hey, not only do we need a backup, but in some cases maybe a platoon makes more sense, right? Mm-hmm. We see plenty of platoons around the league now. And maybe, you know, in some cases it's, okay, I'm going to split this dollar two ways instead of just giving the dollar to my starter. But it's an interesting from an expansion draft perspective because teams, I think, are going to be more reticent to shake loose goaltenders, for example, unless they truly have a logjam of guys. Like, I think the Rangers are fascinating from that perspective, right? You got the first ballot Hall of Famer in Lundqvist still in situ, and you've got two really impressive goaltenders coming from behind. And it's at some point, you know, you're hearing a lot of the trade market spatter about what the Rangers are going to do with one of those two goalies as a trade piece, and they will move them. But you start putting in the perspective of the expansion draft, and it's like, you know, what does this all look like? The other point that I cannot wonder about more than anything is I wonder if teams are going to change their strategy going into the expansion draft, knowing that Vegas took so many teams for a ride, not because of the rules of the draft, but because of the machinations behind the scenes to pay more at the end of it. And, you know, like, Florida gets a lot of flack for the Marchessault and Smith thing, and it was obviously laughable at the time to protect Alex Petrovic. But, like, Columbus paid a premium, Minnesota paid a premium. Like, there were, like, five or six teams that basically were like, hey, I don't want to give you a dollar, I want to give you $2. And, like, I just think teams are going to, by and large, try and stick to the expansion draft rules where possible. Because I think they have now realized that the expansion team, in this case Seattle, is going to be smart enough to know that if they're going to try and skirt the rules of the draft, they're going to make a pay for it. And I think that creates an interesting, potentially chill factor in terms of it may not chill the moves directly, you know, in the trade market between Seattle and a given team. It may chill that, but it may not chill the engineering of trades between other teams to kind of right-size their roster so they're in the best spot to, in terms of protecting the talent that they care about.
Very good, Travis. Well, the last time you were on, you're known for your strong analysis and your wild opinions about food and restaurants. Last time you were on, I brought up the Olive Garden to you, and you put me right in my place. That was fine. I'm happy to have you say anything you're thinking here. I want to tell you this. I was in a conversation out in the office today with a coworker, and we were talking about Girl Scout cookies. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, I don't really like the Samoa too much. And I said, come to think of it, I've never had a good cookie. And I thought, wow, I've got to run that by Travis. I've got to run that by you.
That's a bold take. Hey, let me tell you something. I'm not a big cookie guy, but how do you skirt? Is it the mint chocolate chip Girl Scout cookies? The mint ones?
Yeah.
Just get out of here with mint. Mint is a terrible choice.
I mean,
wait a second. I don't think. I mean, I'm not super pro mint, generally speaking. But For Girl Scout cookies, I've been known to buy a couple hundred boxes from an 8-year-old out in front of a grocery store. Yeah, I'll do that.
My advice is, if you're craving those, go brush your teeth. You get the same taste
right
in your mouth.
Right. That's it. Exactly.
Why have a cookie? Why have a cookie?
Why have a cookie when you can brush your teeth?
Practice some hygiene instead. You could do this. Accomplish the same thing. Your mouth will taste like mint when you're done.
How can you have never had like a delicious, warm, just out of the oven chocolate chip cookie?
Oh, they're so boring. I don't know. I just don't.
I will make an argument. I will make an argument in a quasi defense. I do think cookies are a little overrated because, like, you know, there is an opportunity cost, right? If I eat a warm out of the oven cookie, that might be all fine and well. But like, could I rather have a donut? Like, I would in any way, shape, or form prefer to have the donut over the chocolate chip cookie. I mean, that's not even debatable.
Right. Or pizza.
Well, pizza, you got to be tricky. You got to be. Don't get me started.
No, we're going to pizza here. You probably, what
fine,
do you
or a cheeseburger.
You probably eat pizza with a spoon. I don't know what to do with you.
Yeah, all right. I don't mean pizza. I just mean pizza and pizza-like foods that people go out to eat. They're not cookies, not dessert. All right, Travis, thanks as always.
All right, take care, guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.